Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Are animals things, or are they more than simply a thing? If they are things, then if you own it, you can do what you want with it. You could, if you like, hook it up to machines and see how much pain it can endure before dying. You could inject it with all sorts of morbid viruses and bacteria and drugs to see what might happen. You could, if you like, cut out sections of its brain to study the effects of experimental brain surgery. But some are saying great apes are conscious. They're sentient. They feel. They're intelligent. They're aware. They love. They grieve the loss of other beings, and therefore deserve to be treated as such. And that means giving them protections. And that means they are becoming more like humans in the eyes of the law. Stay tuned. To what degree are great apes, chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans similar to humans? They share 95% of our DNA. They act like us. They entertain us. Anyone who works with them knows that they are much more than just an animal. As a matter of fact, they are amazingly human in many ways. And now a 26-year-old chimpanzee faces an uncertain future. And it's raising some very serious questions about whether Heasel, that's his name, can be treated with no concern for what his 26 years of life and friendships and happiness represent. Does Heasel have rights? If so, what are they? And how will the court define them? We go in depth with Heasel, following a brief review of this week's Nature News. So now, the news. As global warming heats things up, the world's oceans are already feeling the heat, and it's directly responsible for a sudden increase in what scientists call white syndrome, in which mature coral reefs are effectively turned lifeless with even a minor increase in ocean temperatures. The stories have been coming in for years. Now the science is backing up the findings. To date, 25% of the world's corals have already been lost. And it's expected that another 30% will be gone in the next 30 years. Corals, which serve an important component of the complex life cycles of thousands of sea creatures, are disappearing at an alarming rate. There is no effective fix imagined yet, as the warming trends already have a momentum that will take years to change, even with the extraordinary efforts by the global community. Puget Sound has, for a long time, been one of the best spots to watch killer whales do what whales do, put on fantastic displays of leaps and twists and what many perceive as wondrous family-bonding displays. But suddenly, killer whales in Puget Sound are dying and disappearing, despite protections offered by being designated a marine sanctuary. But a recent finding by a whale-loving biologist who has listened with sensitive underwater microphones to the calls, clicks, and squeals of the local killer whale community proves that powerful underwater sonar used by U.S. naval vessels in the bay cause sudden disorientation, reflexes to flee and surface, potentials for sudden beachings, and ultimately explain the problem. A recent encounter of a naval vessel in the sanctuary was recorded, and with quick action, the captain of the naval vessel was alerted and the sonar discontinued. Please, let this be noted generally throughout the militaries of the world. Stop torturing the great other beings on the planet for no real reason at all. With much of the world looking for alternatives to oil, biofuel is the alternative of choice to increase energy security, reduce greenhouse gases, and spur new markets for farmers. The oil lords of the Middle East, beginning with OPEC's Fuad Siala, are taking lessons from the pharmaceutical companies that keep reminding us that unless they can keep drug prices high, they may have to cut back on research, which could result in less effective drugs, longer waits to bring new drugs to market, and so we should be happy to pay that high price. The OPEC captains of carbon emissions say that because people are looking at alternatives, they may have to invest less than oil production, which could ultimately threaten the future supplies and could even cause an unexpected oil shortage in the years ahead, which, if we just stopped creating such insecurity for them and kept buying their oil, they could keep investing in making oil for us all. Enough said. And finally, many of the world's leading scientific institutions announced the launch of the Encyclopedia of Life, a first-of-its-kind global effort to document all 1.8 million named species of animals, plants, and other forms of life, and make it all accessible through the Internet. Cooperating at the Field Museum, Harvard University, the Marine Biological Laboratory of Woods Hole, the Smithsonian Institution, and the Biodiversity Heritage Library, all uniting their efforts with a global array of partners and patrons, this multi-million-dollar effort is expected to take 10 years to complete. This complete listing will be drawn from the more than 250 years of scientific classification, note-taking, and notations, and pull them all into a fully illustrated, globally accessible website. Thank you, John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, for creating this important catalog of life. And that's the news. And now, to our main story. The future of the wild creatures is gaining a lot of prominence all of a sudden on the planet. People are waking up to the fact that it does matter. In particular, as we look at some of the issues of global warming and the issues of the future of polar bears, for example, and the concern about whether or not they'll survive, but then as well the larger issues of mass extinction are being discussed. And so the future of animals is very significant. And certainly there's possibly no more compelling stories and questions than circulate around the issue of the future of some of the most significant creatures, particularly those that are most closely related to us, and that, of course, becomes the great apes. We hear a lot coming from Jane Goodall and others who are working in research and preserving these species and the demise that's happening to their habitats and as well themselves and their communities as they're being treated as bushmeat by indigenous peoples and others. So their future is really challenged. There's many aspects to this issue of the primates and animal rights, and there's many ways in which people that try to approach this. And right now we're going to take a terrific path into this topic of animal rights with someone who's central to literally redefining some of the rights from a legalistic perspective. And this is Michelle Stumpy, who is the president of the Great Ape Project USA, and as well the president of the Great Ape Project International. She's joining us now from Atlanta. Michelle, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Michelle, first of all, I've come across the Great Ape Project, otherwise known as GAP, because of a recent story about a 26-year-old chimpanzee, Heasel, who yes. is facing some very difficult times ahead, some real questions, and it's raising some legal issues. And because much of the work of the Great Ape Project has to do with legalities, tell our audience why it is that you're looking at this question of Heasel right now, particularly from its legal basis.
Well, it's a very important issue to us because the Great Ape Project is founded upon really extending the protections that are currently available to the great apes. Currently, under our legal system, unfortunately, these creatures are treated as property, so pretty much anything can be done to them. And Heasel is a great example. He has been in a sanctuary for 26 years and is now possibly going to be sent to a research facility. And so the issue that is placed is what can be done to protect Heasel from, first of all, being sent to the research facility, and second of all, with respect to the funds that are being donated to his care, how can it be ensured that those funds will be used in his best interest rather than just being sent to the research facility for his basic living expenses? The way our current legal system works, he is not entitled to have a guardian or have his best interest considered. And so this lawsuit that has been filed is really an effort to work within the legal structure as it is to grant him the bare basic rights that are necessary to have a guardian appointed so that his best interest will be taken into consideration with respect to his future and the funds that are being donated for his benefit.
what this kind of boils down to is that what you're trying to do is to find a legal basis for giving him, in essence, the rights that a person may have. And it's creating a terrific amount of flap out there because a lot of people are suggesting that what you're trying to do is to suggest that the great apes and humans are the same. Why don't you help us understand what your real position is?
Okay, and we do get that quite a bit. I think the problem is that a lot of people, and it's understandable, unless you have been trained as a lawyer, some of the legal terminology tends to be misconstrued or misunderstood. We are not saying that great apes are the same as humans. We're not seeking that they have the right to vote or go out and drive a car. We're simply looking at, from a realistic and practical perspective, that they be granted the rights that are necessary to give them the freedom from torture, the right to life, the freedom from arbitrary deprivation of liberty, from being taken from their homeland, as Hazel was. And so this idea of personhood or being given the rights as a legal person is often misunderstood. One of the things I think I would like to just point out and remind the listeners is that, for example, in our structure, in our legal structure, a corporation is considered a legal person. Now, that doesn't mean a corporation is a human. It's just that in order for an entity to have the rights, to have their best interest is considered, to have the rights to sue, they have to be considered legally defined as a person. And so that's all we're seeking for the great apes, is that they be given that legal definition that would entitle creatures such as Hazel to the appointment of a guardian, to have his best interest considered and protected from the torture that he will imminently face in a research facility.
There's some terrifically interesting historical roots, from at least as I've thought about this issue. And really what the fundamental issue has to do with the fact that we have humans who are given these rights, and then almost everything else is other than human and therefore does not have the same rights. What this means is that in essence, therefore, a great ape becomes a thing, as opposed to something greater than just a thing, and therefore it can be bought and sold and treated as a thing, an object.
Exactly.
It can be, it's almost, if there isn't some higher level of status given to a creature like a great ape, it's pretty much you can do whatever you want with that creature, and that is part of the story, because what happens is these animals are treated that way, for example, in research facilities, and it becomes quite a debatable issue. Help us understand that difference between, it's sort of a middle ground, at least that's how I interpret it, between being human and being an object.
And that really, I think, taps into the moral and ethical background of the Great Ape Project and where we're coming from, because I think most people would agree that great apes are not, shouldn't be considered things like a chair or something that I could just throw out a window and not have any consequences to having done so. You can't, shouldn't be able to just torture them and poke them and prod them and cut them and take away food and see how they react under certain deprivation type of circumstances. You know, a lot of people tend to ask, why great apes? A lot of the animal rights groups, for example, wonder, you know, why do we focus on great apes in our quest for legal rights to be extended to them? And there is an abundance of scientific research that has observed and documents what they call the sentience of these animals. These are extraordinary animals. They share emotions such as fear, anxiety, and happiness. They kiss to make up, they laugh, they cry, they have the ability to create and use tools to hunt. I think one of the amazing things is they have the ability to learn language, and not only learn our language, sign language, but they then on their own will teach it to their young and add new words, new vocabulary to that language. So there's certainly a forethought that they experience. They plan for their future. They mourn for the loss of loved ones. They have a great degree of emotions and a level of intelligence that really, I think, if we're going to look at it in any kind of moral perspective, we have to say, doesn't that deserve some sort of protection greater than that of a chair or just a mere piece of property that anybody can do with what they please without any significant ramifications?
You know, it's interesting because the concept of slavery was based on the a notion that, talking about the United States, that blacks really were less than human and therefore could be treated as property, and that also rights shouldn't be extended to them because they weren't capable of really exercising the full panoply of great advantage of democracy and liberty and things of that nature. And so to some extent, I like to think of this as a question of whether or not we have the right to enslave creatures, that becomes something that people can more easily kind of resonate with, because that is in truth what we do. We treat these animals as our personal slaves.
And it's interesting that you bring up that point, because there have been many parallelisms drawn to the treatment of great apes, to the treatment of the African slaves historically. And interestingly, there are documented cases of humans being kept in zoos as back in the years and in our history. So it is an interesting question. And a number of people will question what we are seeking and think, okay, well, if you're not in favor of the capture or the captivity of these creatures, what do you propose we do? We can't just, you know, we're going to have to open up all the zoos and let all the great apes roam free. Certainly, unfortunately, for the great apes, that's just not practical, and it's not realistic. They can't survive out in the wild because we have taken them from their natural homelands. We can't put them back in their natural homelands where they belong because they simply can't survive there. So it's important that sanctuaries continue to develop, and that, you know, really what we're looking at is taking a different perspective and what is in the best interest of these creatures, not treating them as our slaves or as our property for our own entertainment, as we see in the entertainment industry, where, you know, unfortunately, great apes are tortured, particularly chimpanzees are tortured, or they use very frightening techniques to get the chimpanzees to do what they do on television. And it's just morally not right.
Well, for example, I don't think there's very many humans out there that would think it would be right to take, let's say, a horse or, for example, a pony or some other animal like that, and literally hook them up to a machine and then basically force them to work until they dropped it dead. Anybody who witnessed that or even thought about that, they would say there's something wrong with that. That's not right. We can't just treat animals that way. But the corollary that disturbs me, and I think it also is tends to drive some of your effort, is that to a large extent, that's exactly what is happening to these great apes in research facilities. And I'm not going after research facilities. That's not my effort here. I'm not trying to close them all down. But I am saying that we definitely have to look at these questions and say, if we wouldn't do this to a horse or a pony, to hook it up to a machine that forced them to work until they dropped dead from exhaustion, that would be torture, that would be cruel and unusual punishment. It wouldn't be right to do that to any animal. Nevertheless, these animals, like the great apes who are in some of the research facilities, things happen to them that I'm sure you could expand on, that literally forces them to be in a perpetual state of pain, agony, in essence, torture. And yet somehow we see that differently. Am I right about that?
You are. You're exactly right about that. And I think that there's a couple of different aspects of that issue. One of the aspects is that because we're selfish, And there is a misperception, and I think that needs to be very clear, there is a misperception that because these creatures are so similar to us, that they are valuable as research tools, and that research on these creatures is of value to humankind. And the research, however, points out that there has been really no benefit to humans from the use of chimpanzees in research. And that, to me, I think is very compelling. There's a great website on this. The New England Anti-Vivisection Society has done an extensive research program about the use of chimpanzees in research and whether or not it has been beneficial. And it's amazing to me how little people know about the fact that there really is no benefit of using these creatures in research for human beings. And I think that's one of the problems, is that we have that selfishness. But even if you want to be selfish, let's just look at it practically. Let's just look at it logically. And I encourage people to look at that research. It's neavs.org is the website. And it's under the research and restitution link. But they've just got some great information on that, in that topic. And the other issue is, just simply like you pointed out, if we wouldn't do this to a horse, we wouldn't do this to another animal. Think about it in this perspective. How is a chimpanzee different than a mentally incapacitated human, or than a 2 or 3 year old deaf-mute child who can't talk but can use sign language? And would we do these things to that individual?
Right. We would not use them as experimental beings.
Absolutely.
We just wouldn't, and we couldn't sell them. Okay.
Exactly. We couldn't sell them. We couldn't take them out of their homes after they had been living there for 26 years, even though they can't talk and they can only use sign language, and put them in a research facility to live out the rest of their life in torture. We wouldn't do that to them to begin with, let alone in Heasel's situation, where he's had a relatively comfortable life, because he was illegally taken from Africa. And, is now facing the doom of a research facility.
Well, talk a little bit about Heasel, by the way, because he actually is becoming a person of the world.
Well, Heasel is a chimpanzee. He was taken in 1982 from West Africa with several other young chimps. They were being shipped to a research facility. And, however, because of the laws that were in place at the time, they didn't have the proper documentation. And so he was sent to a sanctuary instead of, they intercepted, and he was sent to a sanctuary. Where he has been, there is a woman in Austria, Paula Stibbe, who has had regular contact with him since the late 90s. And she is the person who has been proposed as the guardian for Heasel. Because the sanctuary where he currently is low on funds and facing bankruptcy, the only result may end up being that Heasel is sent to a research facility, or that he has to be sold outside of Austria, where there really won't be any, unless he has a guardian, there will be no control over how he is used and where he's sent, because he's property. He can be sold. He can be bought by the highest bidder. Heasel is not unlike any other chimpanzee that that is out there with respect to his mental capacity, his emotional well-being. Paula Stibbe, for example, talks about how anytime she comes in, he greets her with kisses and hugs. And me personally, having worked with chimpanzees and gorillas and orangutans, I'll tell you that that's exactly how they are. They're very friendly. They recognize you. They become a friend in a large sense. They teach you games that they want to play. They will laugh with you. They'll cry. They want to learn. They're much like dealing with a small child, and that's how Hazel is. And he's just a big child in a big chimpanzee body, but he still needs the same protections that are currently reserved only for human persons.
People have pointed out that he's a very entertaining and lovable being, that he has his likes and his dislikes, he knows what he wants, he recognizes people, there's certain foods that he prefers, like certain pastries and things. And, you know, when we get to know these creatures, and a part of the difficulty is the fact that we are so isolated from them, the vast majority of people never really appreciate just how intelligent the animals are. You've had experience working with them?
I have, and that's something that I have always thought, if only every person could have an opportunity to spend even, you know, 2 or 3 days with one of these creatures, they would have their mind changed. I think they would clearly see them as individuals, not as just, you know, another piece of property or another being. They all have their own unique personalities. I was in Africa working with some a couple of years ago, and each one you have, you know, the one who likes to be the entertainer. He's a big goofball. He's the leader of the pack, but yet he's the one who is always making faces and trying to get people to laugh, or, you know, breaking up a fight and then starting a tickle fight instead. And they do each have their own individual personalities. I'm on the board of a gorilla sanctuary up here in North Georgia, and they have two gorillas, one who's 43 years old, and he's very mild, he's very gentle, he's very deliberate about everything he does. He absolutely adores my husband, thinks I'm okay, but my husband, when my husband walks in, once he hears his voice, he starts purring and grumbling, because he's glad that he's there, and he'll display for him, and he'll do play for him. And then, you know, there's another gorilla in the same sanctuary who is deaf, and that's why he's there, because he doesn't do well in zoos on display, because he gets scared easily. But he's got a totally different personality, has different things that he likes, different things that he dislikes. Some of them like to go outside and be outside all day long. Others like to hang out in the shade or hang out inside most of the day. They have different things that they like to play with. There's one of the gorillas in Africa that I used to enjoy working with. He loved getting leaves and dressing up and putting them on top of his head and running around with a hat on. Just a lot like children. They're just such amazing creatures, and they learn from you, and like I said, they laugh, they cry. One of my first experiences as a teenager was with a gorilla who was mentally disabled, and I worked with her for months and months, and she used to just rock in a corner all day long. And after working with her for several months, she got up out of the corner and she came over and she looked in my eyes, and then she started playing patty cake with me. And you know, from that point forward, we started developing a relationship, and she started teaching me games. And the day that I told her that I was moving, she started crying. And I was thinking, how do you know what I'm telling you? Maybe you can sense it in my voice. I don't know. But it was just an amazing experience to see that there is that level of emotion that they experience.
You're very fortunate. I wish that I had the opportunity to have that type of communion with these creatures so that I could even better understand it. And you're very fortunate. I'm going to push it just a little bit, and then we're going to come back to the mainstream topic here. But let's be honest here. I mean, you be honest with me. Tell me what you really feel is that connection. I mean, to what degree are you able to get a sense that there is a communion, a connection, a sharing of consciousness between you and those creatures? And of course, it's a very personal thing.
It is. I can't explain it. It is a connection that when you know, when I go somewhere and I spent some time with a particular individual and have been gone for 4 years and come back, and it's clear that they recognize me. Because they're like any other creature. They're going to be hesitant. They're not going to come up to you immediately if they don't remember you, if they don't know who you are. And it takes a long time to develop that trust and to engage that trust. And then when you go back and they run up and hug you and they say, oh my gosh, you know, you've been gone so long, where have you been? And then they want to just sit and, you know, pet your face or look at you and look at your hand and smell you. You know, there's a clear recognition, a clear remembering of you as an individual. And just the different personalities. Some of them I don't have that much of a connection with. Others, there's an incredibly strong connection. It's funny because I'd say with animals, with all of the dogs I've ever had, with all of the pets that I've ever had, I've always developed a really strong connection with them. With great apes, they're much more individualized. Some of them, like I said, some of them, my husband has a much stronger connection than I do with some. And just individually, you know, other people that I know have stronger connections with some versus others. It's so hard to explain. But, you know, when you're working with a chimpanzee, and chimpanzees are kind of notoriously selfish, and they're all running around trying to fight over a mango, and then you've got one that's your friend, and they come over and they pull you to a corner and they give you half their mango. You know, I'm just kind of going, hey, thanks, it's okay, you can have it. You know, no, I want you to. And there's this odd kind of connection. That's me personally. And whether I've got a connection or somebody else doesn't, it's really not what all this is about. Certainly that is what drives my passion. But I look at it from a very scientific, practical perspective when it comes to the Great Ape Project and the goals of the project.
One of the things that you shared that I find to be a common discussion, and that is that these animals seem to retain a memory of an individual person for years and years and years. I'm not sure that dogs do that to the same extent. It seems to me when I've run across a dog that perhaps I knew 4 or 5 years ago, it takes quite a while for them to really recognize me again, but it seems as if, again, I'm just speculating here, but as if the great apes have an even greater consciousness and connection with individuals than dogs, for example, which are so amazing in terms of communicating.
Right.
Well, we'll get back to the topic here. So let's talk about how it is that you're hoping to address this from a legal perspective. That's a tough one. What are your efforts here?
Our efforts are to really take a very practical approach and to legally gain the protections that are necessary to afford these creatures just the basic fundamental rights, the basic fundamental protection that they deserve. And that is, it's very simple, the right to life, to be free from being killed arbitrarily. You know, if I'm in a research facility and they've got too many chimpanzees and they can't feed them all, then, you know, just kill a couple off. That shouldn't happen. So there's that fundamental right to life, the freedom from arbitrary deprivation of liberty, from being deprived, from being able to roam in the wild, if that's where they happen to be, or from being confined in a small cage where you can barely move around. The protection from torture, from being stabbed with needles day in and day out, from being knocked down, from being injected with AIDS, which isn't going to affect the chimpanzee because they don't get sick from it, but is going to require that they now live their life in solitary confinement. Or the other more invasive procedures that go on with the great apes. So these are very basic fundamental protections, and unfortunately, as property, they don't get those protections. Certainly, there are some animal cruelty laws, and there has been some movement in this direction. The Chimp Act made some good strides in this direction, but there are some flaws with it. You know, as far as the age where chimpanzees will be removed and retired into sanctuaries, and the loopholes in the Chimp Act that would allow a chimpanzee who has been taken to a sanctuary from a research facility to then be put back into research. So we've made some movement, but really the only true, the only surefire way to ensure these protections is through legal rights, and those rights being the personhood issue. And I'm not saying, you know, declare them as humans. I'm saying declare them legally as, or we're saying declare them legally as persons. Corporations. Is a legal person.
I'm just curious, you know, our law is based on precedent. So and if you're making a legal case, you almost have to rely on some sort of precedent. What legal basis are you using to make your case?
Well, there are a number of different legal precedents. I think the interesting one that's going on right now with Heisel is in one of the things that is interesting is that a lot of people are misquoting the judge's ruling with respect to Heisel. She did express concern about, you know, granting the same legal status as humans and the impression that that might give, but that wasn't the basis of her ruling. The basis of her ruling was that the argument was that Heisel was you know, in the same capacity as, you know, somebody who couldn't protect themselves. And her ruling was based on the fact that he was neither mentally impaired nor in a state of emergency, not anything else. So she did not come out and say that he should not be granted personhood.
Right, but that the precedent didn't exist for that. Those protections for either a person in imminent crisis or disabled, I think, is kind of the precedent.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That the precedent that was being relied on, or the precedent that she had available to her, would have said, okay, this a guardian can be appointed to an individual in Heisel circumstances if that individual is deemed or declared by the court to be mentally impaired or in an emergency.
Now, I believe this is a foreign court, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Right. And how about in the United States? Are we making moves here as well?
There are moves in the United States. There have been a number of actions filed. There's been a recent case that resulted in a settlement out of court. So we haven't had any... we haven't had any direct legal precedent said. There have been a number of close calls, if you will. There was a situation of a chimpanzee, I believe, out in California, who unfortunately died shortly before the court's ruling, so it rendered the case moot. And but there have been a number of suits that have been filed with respect to great apes that are used in entertainment. There have been actions filed. One of a big success was an action filed and resulted in the closing of the Coolston Foundation, which is the research facility, and the moving of the chimpanzees in that facility to sanctuary situations. And that's a lot of what Project R&R through NEEVS is working on, is the research chimpanzees in the United States.
Well, Michelle, I wish we could talk, and maybe we will have a chance again in the future, because I'd love to carry on this conversation and really continue to go in depth, but we do have limited time. So my question would be, so what is the status now of this in the Austrian courts, and the prospect that perhaps this may gain some traction around the world and even the United States, and then ultimately, what would this mean?
Well, where we are right now in the Austrian courts is that Heisel has been denied the guardianship that has been sought. That is going to be appealed, according to our sources, and we'll hopefully have a chance to have that reversed and to get the guardianship appointed to Heisel. And so that's where we are as far as the Austrian courts are concerned. It's a great opportunity to really bring this issue to the forefront, to really have people start thinking about it. And I think the important aspect is to really be educated about the efforts that are being made, educated on the law and what the law means, rather than just a first impression, wait a second, legal rights for great apes? That sounds crazy. I don't want apes to be able to vote and drive cars.
Which is unfortunately the total focus of the media right now.
And it is, and I understand that. I understand that from a layperson's perspective. It sounds radical. It sounds eccentric. It sounds crazy. And I come from a very conservative background, and so I tend to look at things very conservatively. And it's just interesting to me. So I understand the concern, the fear, and that's why, to me, it's so important for people to really look at it and see it for what it is, not for this radical, crazy idea to have, you know, chimpanzees driving cars. There is a growing support as people become more educated. We've seen it just this past spring, earlier, a couple months ago, the Balearic Parliament in Spain declared a resolution indicating their support for the granting of legal rights to great apes based on their intelligence and emotional parallels to those of humans. New Zealand, back in 1999, passed similar laws. UK government has banned experiments on great apes back in 1997. So around the world, we really are seeing a growing interest and a growing recognition that the current protections, if you want to call them that, the current legal treatment of these creatures is not sufficient, and something needs to be done differently. And, you know, under our current legal status, under our current legal structure, this is the way to accomplish those protections. And again, if people would actually look at it from what it really means in legal terms, I think they'd realize that it is not as radical as they think it is. And I think you'd find a lot more people supporting the idea and recognizing that no matter what religion you are, no matter what political side you tend to lean towards, it's just kind of a common moral issue that probably most people would agree on.
In terms of, let's say 5 years from now, this has made some progress and the legal precedents have been set. Then let's talk about the practical, simple side. What would that actually mean?
That would mean that we don't have great apes being used in research and being tortured. And that's the biggest aspect of it. We have some more teeth behind the laws in the countries where great apes, are roam free. We would probably not see a whole lot of movement with respect to the great apes that are currently housed in zoos with respect to their location, because practically speaking, there's just not enough sanctuaries out there. But I think you would see more of a movement to a sanctuary-like atmosphere for the great apes in zoos, a bigger focus on enrichment. And there are some zoos that do take that into consideration. A lot of zoos who are moving towards that already, but looking at the enrichment and the efforts to really provide the best environment possible for these creatures, if they can't be sent to a sanctuary or to some other place so that they can be protected. You'd see the end of using chimpanzees and orangutans in entertainment and being tortured for our entertainment. You know, I think you'd see a world that is recognizing that we do have some moral and ethical obligations to not only ourselves, but also to these other creatures.
I can only believe that we benefit and prosper in that growth of our own consciousness and awareness, and that instead of the world being lessened by such laws and regulations, it would be dramatically and wildly enriched. We're talking with Michelle Stumpy, who is the president of the Great Ape Project USA and International. Michelle, if people want to find out more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to learn more?
The best way would be to go to our website, which is www.greatapeproject.org.
Well, thank you so much. We'll continue this conversation in the future. It's one I definitely want to follow.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be following the story of Hazel in the weeks and months ahead. Tune in next week and every week as we bring you the most comprehensive coverage of the natural world and the most important 15 minutes on Earth with the weekly Earth Summit. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives when your voice of the Earth reaches out around the world here on the Wildside News.